Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
It's April 22nd, 1983, and another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Ariel, Rebecca, and Ali, the Retrospectors.
Adolf Hitler was a ruthless authoritarian, a racist ideologue, and a warmonger. Or was he? Because it was today in history, in 1983, that the German magazine Stern announced the discovery and imminent publication of the Führer's long-lost diaries, which they promised would change everything everyone knew about the much maligned Herr Hitler.
Much maligned might be underselling it,
much
I feel.
Maligned. Yeah, well, I mean, historians were immediately divided on their authenticity, but it's not a spoiler. You know, in the present day, we know that Hitler did not leave a trove of secret diaries. This did turn out to be one of the greatest literary hoaxes and one of the most embarrassing of all time. So why did Stern, a respected German magazine, you know, the German equivalent to Life in the US, believe that they were real or that they could be real? Well, it was a known fact that in the final days of World War II, a plane carrying 10 boxes of unspecified personal papers belonging to Hitler crashed on its way from Berlin to the Eagle's Nest retreat in the Bavarian Alps. The contents were never recovered, which means they had become a bit of a holy grail for World War II nerds.
Yes, although there were warning signs here. Firstly, nobody around Hitler, nobody had ever mentioned that he'd kept a diary. Number two, these journals, when they were supposedly recovered from the plane that had flown out of Berlin days before he died, were nearly all identical. Which isn't how people keep diaries. It would have meant that Hitler would have gone and bought 62 identical blank notebooks back in the 1930s rather than buying a new one each time.
This seems about as long as I'm going to live, so 62 will be fine.
And the third really obvious point was the Mussolini diaries. There had been a fraud in which two women from Italy had very successfully imitated Mussolini, which was a much more plausible idea because Mussolini did keep diaries, and had previously stung the Sunday Times into paying for them. And this was clearly the same playbook.
Yeah, I think despite everything, all of those warning signs, I think the thing that made Stern really want to publish was the content itself. You know, they knew that there would be just this unparalleled interest in what Hitler had to say in his private moments. And it's interesting to look at what was in the volumes, fake as they were, and the revelations were things that were everything from the big and significant to the totally mundane. For example, Hitler's partner, Eva Braun, wanted tickets to the 1936 Olympics for free, which annoyed the Führer, according to his diaries. She also wanted him to see a doctor for his health. One direct quote was, "At Eva's request, I let my doctors examine me properly. The new pills cause strong flatulence and, as Eva said, bad breath." But I think, you know, the main thing that got people interested was that the diaries disclosed this really surprising side of Hitler, portraying him as unexpectedly sensitive and unaware to the unfolding events involving the Jews. The diaries said, for example, "The measures begun on the 1st against Jewish institutions are too violent for me. I immediately warned the men responsible for them." But of course, you know, none of this was true. It was just stuff that maybe some Hitler apologists wanted to believe.
One of the things that had convinced Stern that this was the real deal and convinced everyone else too was that they had invited several historians to come and inspect the diaries, which were being held in a Swiss bank vault at the time. And one of these was Hugh Trevor Roper. He was a member of the board at the Times of London, but he was also an Oxford University historian and a well-known Hitler expert. And in many respects, he was a brilliant historian. His work was very influential, but I have to say, on this one, he goofed, and he realised pretty quickly that he had made a mistake when he initially verified them as authentic, but by this point it was too late, the wheels were in motion. And in his defence, he was really misled about the documents. He was falsely told that forensic experts had scientifically verified the age of the paper, which was not true, and he said afterwards, he simply couldn't believe that someone could forge this much diary.
Yeah, because there were so many volumes. But he also said that he'd felt pressured into what he saw as kind of journalistic levels of authentication rather than a historian's level of authentication because this was being done to a journalistic timetable because it was an international scoop. And it was a scoop that had been sold on that basis to the Sunday Times, personally negotiated by Rupert Murdoch, for $1.2 million. Murdoch very savvily got a money-back clause in there if the diaries turned out to be fake. So he got to win twice. He got to boost his circulation by 60,000 by running these spurious extracts from the Hitler diaries, and it didn't cost him anything because he got his money back. But of course, that wasn't something that Sunday Times journalists were very happy about. Even before they knew it was fake, they had suspicions. So it was really important for the journalists on the paper, including the editor, Frank Giles, to do an investigation into the authenticity of the diaries for themselves. And Murdoch personally said, no, that's not going to happen. We need to get this out ahead of everyone else. We need to get this out ahead of Stern. He was so keen to be first that he said, no, that's good enough for me. We are publishing. Millions of copies were literally rolling off the press when Frank Giles called Hugh Trevor Roper with a celebratory tone, you know, let's get the champagne out. And the staff in the newsroom heard Frank Giles say, and slowly going pale, as he said on the phone, to Hugh Roper, well, naturally, Hugh, one has doubts. There are no certainties in this life. But these doubts aren't strong enough to make you do a complete 180-degree turn on that. Oh, I see you are doing a 180-degree turn. And Hugh Roper, on the night of publication, said, actually, I don't think these are real.
Yeah, so if Hitler hadn't written them, who had? The answer is a guy called Konrad Kujau. He was a petty criminal, and in the mid-1960s, he'd got into forgery, starting, of all things, with lunch vouchers. He got into the counterfeiting gig, being like, hey, I could get a free lunch out of this.
That's how it starts, isn't it? I'd like some free food. Ends with denying the Holocaust, yes.
He then got into trafficking Nazi memorabilia. It was illegal to possess or sell it in East Germany, so he kind of got into the business of supplying it under the counter to collectors in Western Europe and the US. And it wasn't long before he realized he could apply his counterfeiting skills to increase the value of the items. And the diaries themselves were fairly easy to write because by this point, Hitler's wartime activities had been, you know, painstakingly reconstructed by historians in literal day-by-day detail. So most of what Kujau did was just copying those accounts.
He only actually practiced for a month to replicate Hitler's old German Gothic script. And then he began utilizing a number of cheap notebooks that he had bought in East Berlin, and adorned the covers with the gold letters AH, or he tried to. He inadvertently had used FH due to mistakenly purchasing Hong Kong-made plastic letters. The people who were looking at these diaries thought, well, that's not Adolf Hitler, but he was probably just signing it Führer Hitler at this stage, so we can, you know, just pass on that one. He then affixed a black ribbon from an authentic SS document onto the cover, and then sealed it with a German army wax seal. So he had some details that moved as gestures towards realism. But to age the diaries, get this, he sprinkled tea over the pages and then vigorously tapped them against his desk, exactly the way that any of us have tried to do a sort of a ye olde treasure map in primary
school. For school plays, except I don't have loads of Nazi stationery.
Did no one sniff the diaries to check if they smelt like tea?
But it didn't take long. Once it was in the public domain that Roper was having doubts about the authenticity of these documents, by the time that Stern held a press conference a few days later, which was supposed to be the big announcement, it turned into a complete farce, with the world's press saying, you know, these are obviously fake. And it didn't take long to show that they were. They were made of paper, ink and glue of post-war origin, provably. They were peppered with historical inaccuracies and anachronisms because of Kujau's diligence to one particular post-war source, a book called Hitler's Speeches and Proclamations, which had inaccuracies in it which were then replicated in the diaries. And then you had this very unpleasant motivation we were hinting at earlier, which is the reframing of the Holocaust within the text itself. There are entries where Hitler talks about the need for a place in the East where the Jews can nourish themselves. Mm. It was clearly an attempt to paint Hitler in a more positive light.
Yeah, so it was at that press conference that Trevor Roper got up and offered his mea culpa. He said, "I regret that the normal method of historical verification has been sacrificed to the perhaps necessary requirements of a journalistic scoop." And at the same event, the diaries were denounced as forgeries by author and future Holocaust denier David Irving, and questions were asked about whether the ink in the diaries had been tested, but there was no response from the managers at Stern. The photographers and film crews who were present then jostled, and some punches were thrown by journalists while security guards moved in, trying to forcibly remove Irving from the room while he shouted, "Ink! Ink!" So it was just absolute bedlam.
But there were more consequences than embarrassment for the perpetrators of the hoax. Heidemann was found guilty of fraud and sentenced to 4.5 years in prison, largely because Kuyao kind of turned on him in court and said, you know, he knew the whole time that I was selling him fake diaries. And it remains kind of ambiguous as to whether he did. Kuyao himself was found guilty of forgery and sentenced to 4.5 years in prison. But upon release, he opened an art gallery in Stuttgart where he sold forgeries in the style of famous artists, this time legally under his own name.
The only real winner, you would have to say, was Murdoch. He later said that circulation went up and stayed up, referring to the 20,000 new readers that the paper had retained after the scandal had broken. Meanwhile, Murdoch moved editor Frank Giles to the new position of editor emeritus. And when Giles asked what the title meant, Murdoch informed him that it's Latin, Frank. The E means you're out and the emeritus means you deserved it.
I love it when you put on an Australian accent.
Tomorrow.
He has 3.2 million subscribers to his channel, even though guess how many videos there are on it? One.
Ditch the ads and get a Sunday episode when you join Club Retrospectors. Patreon.com/retrospectors.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.